Welcome to Widow Too Soon. This is your host, Michelle Bader Eversole. Unfortunately, Mark is not here today, but as always, our kids come first. And it sounds like Alexis has something at the school tonight. He says something about locker night and decorating your locker, even though I think she's only like fourth grade. He'll have to tell us about that when he comes back, but I think they're starting lockers earlier and earlier. So anyways, that'll be fun to talk to him about that. Let me think if anything big since we last recorded, just living life, you know, summer, my oldest is going to go back to college in a couple weeks. So we've been busy doing stuff for him, trying to get him all ready. Starts in a couple weeks, his sophomore year at Washington State University. We got back from Boise. I talked about Boise last week and just been kind of like getting back into life and been busy with a lot of grief recovery clients, which I absolutely love. Anyways, I'm going to get right into the episode. Mark and I will talk more next time we record about what's been going on because I'm really excited because I have a special guest for you today. Her name is Michelle Croyle, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about her and then we'll get to know her. So she is a licensed professional counselor. She provides informational content with the integration of the Christian faith and mental health topics, coaching and practical and beautiful resources to enhance your spiritual and mental, emotional, physical, and relational health. So this is a really fun story about how I met Michelle. So last week, I was running. I listened to this podcast, business school podcast, something like that with Adam Schroff, something like that. I'll get the exact link. It's a really great podcast. Anyways, listening to it on my run. And I hear this woman talk about her podcast. And I was like, I need to get her on our podcast because this sounds amazing. And I memorized her email while I was running. Like, you know, where you think about letters that go with other letters. I was doing that and I got home and I emailed her immediately. And she said, yes, she'd love to be on our podcast. So Michelle, how are you doing today?
Hi, Michelle. I'm doing well.
Yeah. So can you tell us the name of your podcast? I didn't want to say it wrong.
No, it's okay. It's Mental Health for Christian Women.
Yeah. So that was the title that drew my attention when I was like, ooh, I want to talk to her. So, so tell us first, before we really get started, a little bit about just like who's Michelle Croyle, like a little bit about who you are and maybe about how you got started with counseling and with podcasting, and let's just start talking.
Sure. So I had a degree in communications and journalism, and basically it was because I went in for behavioral health and thought I might do counseling. I wanted to help people. Even in high school, I knew that's what I wanted to do. But I found that it was just not something I was ready for as a college student. So I moved into my minor being my major, and that's what I graduated with. And then years later, we had three kids. Probably eight down to two. And I said to my husband, I think I'm supposed to go back to school for my counseling degree.
Oh, wow.
And he was supportive, and I went to Liberty and got my master's in professional counseling. And then because I homeschooled my kids, and like you said, kids come first, right? Family first. I couldn't get licensed. You have to count the hours. You have to have 3,000 hours within like a 5-year max. And I wasn't about to go full time while the kids were young and needing me. So I didn't work in my field until, so I got the degree in January of 2011. So I officially graduated in December of 2010. And then I didn't actually go back to the like outside office until all three of my kids were teenagers. And that was only very part-time. So I did a little bit of here and a little bit there, but it was still pretty much, I could schedule it around the family and everything. And then finally they all were teenagers and I could start counting these hours. And then once I was about 6 months away from licensure, there was something that happened, no fault of anybody, but just something that happened at the group practice I was working part-time at. And it was the time to leave. And here God had a Pinterest board that I had already done of, oh man, someday if I ever have my own practice, I had no idea it was like for now. Yeah. So in 2019, I was like, I think God's saying now. So it worked and I did it. And then the pandemic came and it filled my practice and I haven't looked back. Yeah. So yeah, the pandemic, I mean, it's awful. And I hate that it existed. But as far as a counseling business, a lot of people needed it. So it turned out the Christian counseling focus was perfectly positioned for where people needed it.
Right. And then tell me about how you got started with podcasting.
Oh, so it was during 2020, the spring, like maybe a month after, and things had slowed down a bit and my practice wasn't full yet. And I was in a practice building group and the man who led it basically was teaching a podcast course. And I was like, I'm in. And was nervous and unsure. And now it's like second nature and I just love it.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so what do you specialize in your field?
So I specialize in helping Christian women recover from trauma and anxiety. Mm. And so trauma is defined by me as wound. That's where the word comes from. So in the general population, you might think war trauma, the devastating one-time big events, and that is definitely a trauma, but also it's sometimes the everyday things that we deal with that are too overwhelming, that we don't have enough resources for or enough support, that we don't know how to process, don't have the tools for. So trauma is varied, but if you have a wound and you can't get past it, and I don't mean past like pretending it never happened, but like really where you get kind of a time stamp on it that says, okay, this is now past and now I'm moving on. If that doesn't happen, there's a good chance that you're still struggling with unresolved trauma. Mm.
So I would guess a lot of our listeners have been in that place. I mean, I'm sure you would consider it a huge trauma, your spouse passing away.
Absolutely.
And something, I wonder if you know anything about this. So something I experienced, I had never experienced after my husband died. I started actually having physical things. So he died of cancer, but he actually died of a blood clot. That's his cause of death. And so literally 3 days later, I thought I was having a blood clot. I was lightheaded and I started having this anxiety that I'd never had. And I read a book that said, especially if you witnessed a death, it can change and it can give you more anxiety. Have you heard of that much about that?
Not specifically related to a death, but knowing how the body works with trauma and such, people literally can die of a broken heart. Because there is just the changes that happen in your nervous system when you're overcome with things such as grief, it can definitely have these physical effects. So I'm not at all surprised that they've correlated those together.
Right. Yeah. So you do work with EMDR. Can you explain, and I heard it on your podcast the other day, but I don't remember what it means. Can you tell us what that means? And then what do you do and what kind of people would this be good for?
Okay. So EMDR stands for eye movement, reprocessing. eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. I think that's the first time I've ever screwed it up. Yeah. EMDR. Yeah. I was thinking too much about how I was going to explain it to pay attention to what words were coming out of my mouth. So basically the eye movement part, it doesn't have to be eye movements. Okay. It can be any type of what we call bilateral stimulation. Okay. So meaning it could be tapping on both sides of your body. It could be holding pulsers, like electronic pulsers that go off on in each hand. It could be eye movements going back and forth by following a clinician's fingers or watching a ball on a screen that the clinician can control, or having a light bar if you're in the office and it's kind of like just a light that moves back and forth and you follow it with your eyes. It can also be auditory sounds. So it's they can, you know, do it in each ear. So it's not really about the eye movement, although that's what's been tested and shown to be very effective.
Right.
For trauma. Scientifically, they've done studies and EMDR does help resolve trauma. The thing with the bilateral stimulation that there's probably more to this because we're still learning more and more. The whole trauma field and what it does to your nervous system and how to heal and process it is only about 40 years old, something like okay. that, 45 years old, like in the 80s is when EMDR started to be discovered and developed. And so it's relatively new in the big scheme of things. And now we have more information about the effects of development mm-hmm. and attachment and the body and the nervous system, the polyvagal system, the somatic experience, so the way your body stores trauma. So we have a lot more information now than they used to. And it's just exploding right now as to, like, we can do something about this stuff that maybe couldn't have really been understood to be dealt with at this level mm-hmm. before. And so the bilateral stimulation, the two main points that I think are the key, again, other people might have more concepts of what that is from their understanding, but what I see it doing is, one, it keeps you in the present moment, and two, it keeps you using both hemispheres of your brain. So okay. it's helping you to kind of connect the different parts of the brain. We store information differently in places in the brain. And that is often tied to where our eyes focus as well. So that's possibly why the EMDR uses the eyes was the start, because that does help you to process. But they found that even other types of stimulation, if it's on both sides of the body, that people sometimes end up moving their eyes anyhow. So like if you were to hear sounds or you know, hold pulses or whatever, you might be moving your eyes back and forth anyway, or tapping. But the point of it is, one, to ground you in the present, two, to have both sides of the brain working together. And as you kind of take that information into, like, as a therapist, what we're doing is we're saying, the information about how to ground into the present moment and to have full awareness is what EMDR is the best at. If you can watch and bring the body and the emotions into it, not every EMDR therapist believes that, but that's what mm-hmm. I've found to be the most effective. So when we're talking about the body, we're starting with, you know, the bilateral stimulation, but we're also bringing in an image from an experience that is disturbing, what that negative belief resulted in you from that experience, the feelings that it's bringing up in the present moment, and, you know, at the level of the disturbance, so on a 0 to 10 scale, and the location of it in your body. And so when you can kind of, we do that based on what the client's presenting with. So if somebody were overwhelmed with grief, for instance, and they couldn't go to a store or something that reminded them of somebody, right?
Yeah.
We might just for simplicity say, okay, so when you think about the experience of getting ready to go to the grocery store that the two of you shopped at, what image comes to mind that best represents that? And then the negative belief, and it'll be different based on how the person coded the story, you know, for themselves. Some people might be, oh, I'm comforted when I go to the grocery store. But if it's a trauma wound for this person, it might be, I'm only going to ever buy for one person, you know, and then that might be something that, you know, I am always going to be alone, right? So like we kind of narrow it down as to, and then as we process, the information is not always I feel alone, you know, and as they go through it, the negative belief, the way the brain can also bring in other information. Wait, I've been through hard things before, for example. This is hard and it hurts, but I can find ways to get through it again. Letting your body feel what it feels. So EMDR takes, the therapist takes you through sets of like 40 seconds each, something like that, where you, they say, take a deep breath and release. And what are you noticing now? And the client's job is to not have to do anything but observe. They say it's like riding in a train and you observe the scenery going by. So all you're doing is letting your whole system integrate so that it can process what needs to be healed. Because when we're in trauma, we're typically in fight or flight.
Right.
And that part of the nervous system doesn't allow our logic to come on. So if you've ever felt like numb, like you've numbed out or in a panic or whatever, it's putting pause literally on the part of the brain that allows logic. Okay. And so that is hard to bring into that. And when that happens, you also don't get the, what I said about a timestamp as saying, this is over now. And it feels like it's still happening. Yeah. You may still be having effects in the present moment, but like, for instance, someone passing away, they only pass away once. They're not still passing away.
Right.
But you have moved on since they passed away. But if you can't move on since then in your system, then we need to help you get your timestamp, so to speak. And that could be any number of ways, but it's customized to the client. So whatever is getting in the way of being able to say, okay, like I need to grieve, or I need to have a mindset that allows me to figure out why I can't move on and to say something different that I can actually believe as well. These are the types of things that eventually all get integrated so that the timestamp happens. It doesn't mean that you won't still be sad or that, you know, you would have chosen it or anything like that. It doesn't take away the memory of the loss or the life that was lived. It simply helps your system to be able to process it so that you're not constantly feeling like you're in a deep black hole or constantly anxious or constantly numb or whatever it is.
Wow, that's really fascinating how that all works.
Did I explain that okay?
Yeah, okay. That's really, that's the best I've ever heard it explain. I had an experience I shared with the listeners, but I'll share it again because I'd love to hear your input on this because it was something strange. I'm like, that wasn't regular grief. So I'm usually not in grief. I have grief for my kids a lot, but this was something completely different. It was like a couple weeks ago, my current husband, Joel, and I were downtown Portland, and there was this guy who was like, can you call 911? There's somebody dying on the road. So we called 911, and it was like a homeless guy who had overdosed. And so Joel's got the speakerphone on, the other guy's doing CPR. And I'm like standing on the side of the road, like kind of like I wasn't there. It was the weirdest experience. I'm like, I don't even know what's happening. Like it brought me back to Luke's death, like at his deathbed. And cause I haven't seen anyone die or close to that since Luke died. And then when the ambulance came, it was even worse because I had to call the ambulance probably 10 times over our marriage with all the different things that he had. And it brought me back to this feeling of death and this feeling of just scared. And we ended up, we don't know what happened to the guy. We prayed he was okay. Someone got him this Narcan, which helps, you know, opposite of helps people who have overdosed. Anyways, we left as the ambulance was getting there, but then I just started crying and Joel thought I was like worried about this guy, which I mean, I was, we prayed for him and everything, but he's like, I'm
it wasn't
sure
about the
okay.
guy
I'm
as
like,
much as what was happening.
And then
you.
I started hyperventilating. Like I never do this. Like I couldn't breathe. He's like, what's wrong? And it was just like, I was in this moment, like the timestamp. It was like, I was living all those times I called the ambulance and watching him die, like all at once. And it was so overwhelming. And I've never had this experience. This was like a month ago and I've never had this in my whole life. And then I just ended up crying and then like talking to him and getting past it. Like, what would you say that is? Like, that was so strange to me.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what to think.
That's a trigger.
Okay.
So when we go through something painful, our brain is well, whether we go through it or not, our brain is there to help us strategize so we can survive. That's its mm-hmm. ultimate goal on a very base level. And so anytime it feels that it's in danger of being able to survive and it has a trauma or something overwhelming to its system that it doesn't know how to process or deal with, usually when we're in fight or flight or freeze, you know, where that nervous system is like, my survival feels threatened or is threatened, then what happens there is the brain basically puts like a marker on everything that were the ways that those things were encoded. And they're not always encoded into your brain as if, as they actually happened. They can be coded separately, because you might have certain like sounds that your awareness goes to, and then maybe you remember you saw something, or maybe it's a feeling inside of you, but it fragments. And things like EMDR or other forms of trauma therapy, the goal is to help to integrate the experience from the different fragments, as well as then help you to be able to get that into everyday life so that you can then integrate back into life by healing this. So what you're experiencing is those markers that your brain made, like red flags on the things like ambulance, calling danger, what's going to happen, all of that, your system remembered. And so it experienced it in the present as if you were back in the past. And then the way that you kind of zoned out there was dissociation. And that's the protective mechanism. It's not bad. It's a protective mechanism. Sometimes people are like, oh, I numbed out, or, you know, things got black or whatever. It's can be scary if you don't know what's happening. But it's your body's that like your body has a built in kind of shutdown. Where if it is too much and it can black out, it can get numb, it can just freeze, because there's no other strategy that seems appropriate.
Wow. Well, thanks for explaining that. Yeah. I had no idea, because that's never happened to me. But I haven't been around another death situation. And I felt like pieces of that, like seeing ambulances and stuff like that, but not as extreme as a few feet away from someone who was potentially dying.
Yeah.
And so that's the main part that brought it back.
Right.
Like, whoa. I'm like, I can't be around this. Like,
so if we were to do EMDR around it, you know, we would assess like whoever you would go to for EMDR, they would likely assess for how the experience of the ambulance stuff in the past is still affecting you in the present. And if it's not, but you notice that, oh, wait, this present experience also had ties to the past, then maybe that whole experience, but they can help you kind of decide on where to begin with the processing so that your system can notice what's happening and get the timestamp that, like, you know, you might feel the heart race in those sets, those 40-second increments or whatever. You will notice different things in those sets. And then after the 40 seconds, the therapist will say something like, you know, take a deep breath, clear it out, rest, you know, something like that, and say, what are you noticing now? So again, the observance and the fact that you have to put your words to it is using a different part of the brain. So when we, here's something that I like to say to people is like Star Wars, you know, like if you went to see a replay of Star Wars in the movie theater, you would hear the music, you would feel the, like the rumbling of things, you know, the anticipation, you'd see it on the big screen, you'd feel like you were experiencing this story. But if you were to just read the script of Star Wars, it's just words on a page.
Right.
And that's the difference between our logic and our felt experience. And when we can find a way to make logical sense of our felt experience, make the meaning, it helps us to be able to heal.
Oh, it's so good. Wow. Thank you. I feel like I got a little mini therapy session right there.
You're welcome.
Because I haven't really been able to figure out what that was. So that's really, really interesting. So how do you integrate, you have mental health for Christian women. So tell me about integrating Christianity into your practice and how you do that and what that looks like.
Well, so my practice is called Abundant Freedom Counseling. Okay. And well, that is God named it because I was like, what should I name the practice? And eventually after I tried like sunshine and things like that, it was like Abundant Freedom Counseling. And I'm like, I don't like that. It's too long. Like it's just too long for a name. And, and I kind of like wrestled with God on it, like, no, you know, and then finally I'm like, okay, fine. Abundant Freedom Counseling. But so many times it has like been, he knew best because these people who find me come in with deep wounds and pains and they leave when it's time and they've done their, you know, the work that they've needed to, they leave feeling free from that thing that was holding them back. And so that's my goal with the podcast, because I can only practice in Pennsylvania where I'm licensed. Right. The podcast, I can't do therapy on the, you know, on the podcast or with listeners, but what I can do is educate.
Yes.
And knowledge is power. I had emotional abuse growing up in my childhood. And so I knew I had these internal experiences. I knew I had this anxiety. I knew, you know, I had panic attacks. I had all of this stuff that came to a head in my probably like around 30. And it was showing much earlier, but it around 30, it all kind of came to a head with panic attacks. And when I realized that was trauma and that there was a name for it, and like that people understood what was happening, I was like, oh, how'd they get inside my head? And if there's a word for it, then this must be not just me being like broken. There's gotta be like, this actually happens in our systems. And once I had that language, it was like my passion to not only get the healing I needed for myself, to continue, but to also share that with other people, because if I didn't know it, and, you know, I was in the counseling practice at this, you know, in the counseling field at this point, there are people who aren't in the counseling field who certainly don't know it, and it would help them. So that's my passion. So as far as Christian goes, that just happens to be who I am and how I market it so that I get my ideal client. It's not saying I can't work with other people or that I wouldn't, but it's ideal for a Christian to be able to incorporate their faith to whatever level they want to. And so marketing that way allows people to know that they can bring in that part of them too, with somebody who actually understands the terminology. And I work with people from all kinds of different denominational backgrounds. But having just kind of, okay, here's this mindset stuff that I don't have to explain to somebody else.
Exactly.
You know, it is so helpful. So, but, you know, I just think that having the Christian faith is so important to a Christian believer that you can't keep it out of therapy if you want to bring it in. How do you get wholeness otherwise? So that's why I specialized in that area, because a lot of times Christian women too get a bad rap in the sense that like they think they have to hold it all together, or they can't have negative feelings, you know, feelings that don't feel good and stuff. And I'm like, no, you got some messed up messages there. God made you with feelings. What are they trying to tell you? Let's figure out what you need. And when they realize they're not crazy, they're normal. And that's my tagline to the podcast is, you know, no more crazy lady, because we feel that way. But once we have the information, we're like, oh, this is what's actually happening. It wasn't me. It was the trauma or the anxiety or the situation that was too much.
Right. So what would you say to, a lot of our, all of our listeners that I know of are widowed. A lot of them are in the beginning of their journey, and it's so overwhelming. Just going back to my first few months where I felt like I could barely get out of my bed. It was basically my kids who kept me going. And it was just a very dark place, and I had to learn how to live again, learn how to do, when you lose a spouse, everything in your whole life changes. So what kind of advice, and this is kind of a big question, but like, let's say you had a brand new person you were working with who was brand new widowed, like what kind of tools would you give them in order to continue living?
Yeah. Well, I would encourage them to live where they're presently at. So wherever they are in the moment, what do they need? Because in that moment, they're in the center of the circle, right? At that point, they and their kids are the ones that need the care. So they don't have to worry about how everybody outside of that immediate circle is responding.
Yes.
They are the ones right there that need to do kind of that triage. You know, they need that. And so if that means sleeping more often, if that means going to therapy, if that means exercising or just crying for hours, if that means having people over to laugh, I mean, it's up to the person. Right. And it may change. I just did, as you had mentioned, you had listened to my college roommate lost her husband at 53 within 3 months. And he was diagnosed with cancer and then he was gone by July last year. And, you know, when I did the podcast recording with her, she was saying how, you know, she could be playing a game with her daughters and their friends and be, you know, okay 2 days after his death. But that didn't mean that an hour later, she wasn't going to be sobbing on her bed. And I think just knowing that it's all okay.
Yeah.
It's all okay. Huge. You know, and that you don't have to make or be something that you aren't. Like, feel what you feel, don't feel it. If you need to dissociate and not feel, that's okay too. If you numb out, that's normal too. It's all your system trying to figure out what's happened and regulate itself. And so just take care of you. I would just start with self-care basics. If you need a nap, if you need, you know, remember to eat, if you need somebody to remind you to eat, if you need, you know,
I had that in the beginning. My mom had to make me eat. I mean, she helped me remember to feed the kids and feed myself. And it's just such a whirlwind that you can't even explain to someone like what you feel like in those moments. Yes. You're so lost. Like, literally feels like your whole life is turned upside down, even though for me, I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
It still was not like, it was so strange.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, there's no words for it.
Yeah.
Like to accurately, you know, pinpoint everything that you experienced. And that's because you've never experienced it that way before. And no one else has. You know, you were your husband's wife. So what that meant to you is going to impact you based on your relationship, your history, all kinds of factors. And you are important and you're not doing it wrong.
Yeah, that's great advice. So last week on our, or I guess it'll be a couple of weeks when they hear this, we talked about releasing guilt, and we called the title, "Don't Tie Guilt to Your Grief," and just talked about ways to release that and how you don't need to have guilt. Like, do you have some advice on letting go of guilt? Because it's very, very common. People say, if I would have done this, maybe I could save their life, or I wish I would have said this, or we had a fight. What would be your advice about releasing guilt?
Well, therapists call that woulda, coulda, shoulda. You know, and woulda, coulda, shoulda is not based in reality, because think about it, you weren't planning for this person to die. Even if you knew it was coming,
right,
your hope was that they would live.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. But you know, you were planning for this person to live. So let's say you had an argument before someone had a catastrophic death, for instance. You had the argument because you were in relationship, a living, real relationship with them. You weren't having it because you expected not to make up, right? So you can't expect your past self to know what your present self knows. It's hindsight and that bias. And so hindsight bias is not seeing clearly, because you weren't the person you are today back when it took place.
Yeah.
You only learned as time went on.
Yeah. Oh, that's really, really good. Just a few more questions that I know are really topics that widows talk about. So most, not all of them, but a lot of widows that listen and widowers have kids still living at home and are suddenly thrown into this single parent world that is so difficult. Do you have some tips or advice for being like single and like how to survive that and anything you have to say on that topic?
Yeah. I think the main thing is to not compare your journey to somebody else's, because, you know, somebody else might be in similar circumstances and choose to do it differently than you do. And that's okay. That doesn't mean that they're right and you're wrong or vice versa. It's just people are different. Every marriage was different. Every family makeup is different, you know, every personality in that family. And so if you think about being a single parent now, or a blended family, you know, whatever happens, as time goes on, either way, it's a brand new situation. And so to, again, normalize is the big deal. Normalize the fact that I've never done this before. I've never been at this age in this circumstance with this set of things that I'm trying to accomplish. So of course it's going to be different, and it may be hard, and then I may still have grief on top of it. So I just, you know, grace, compassionate understanding, and you know, being where your body is. Oftentimes we travel back in time, like with guilt, and the woulda, coulda, shouldas, or the future. Oh my gosh, what's this mean? And what's going to happen then? And how am I going to mess this up? And you really only have where you are right now. So do the next right thing. Yeah. Like whatever that is, whatever you need. If that's lunch, then it's lunch.
Yeah.
If it's hugging your kid, then it's hugging your kid. And just make each decision where you actually are, and take it to God and get support. Reach out for healthy supports, not people who are just going to like say things that aren't helpful.
Oh yeah. There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
That's good. And then one more topic that's a big topic is dating again. And a lot of times there's guilt with, oh, like they feel weird going on a date again, you know, all these emotions. And a lot of them ask me, how do I know when I'm ready and things like that. I'd love your advice on that. If someone was like, okay, I don't know, however long it'd been, like when they say to you, do you think I'm ready? Like, how would you assess that? How would you help them to know if they're ready?
I would just ask them, are you ready? Mm-hmm. I mean, like if they say no, then
they're probably not ready if they say no.
And if they say yes, but I'm scared, that's a different thing.
Yeah, that is.
You know, so if, you know, they will know if they're ready or not.
Yeah.
But ready doesn't mean that you won't feel feelings of being afraid or, you know, this is new or gosh, I hope this turns out right. Like, so asking specifically, are you ready or not? And if you are ready, that doesn't mean that you don't have a whole bunch of conflicting feelings.
Right. Yes. That's good. Yeah.
There's, and if you're not, then you don't have to.
Yeah. And that's what I tell them. Like, you will know, same basic thing. I can't tell you if you're ready, you will know, but yes, it'll still be difficult. Like the first time, like I was on a date, I felt so weird. I felt like I was cheating. I was married 17 years. So it felt really weird.
Yeah.
And it's whether, you know, like you want to push through those feelings or not. And, you know, there's a million factors that go into all that. And so it's so individual. I always tell people that. And then the big misconception that we get a lot as widows is like, you know, the length of your grief is how much you loved your late spouse. And like, if you only,
that is
you know,
a total lie.
Yeah. 100%. And like, I had to go through a lot of backlash, not people I knew, but I have a big TikTok presence. And there were so many people, you must not have loved your husband if you're dating again. Cause I started dating Joel at like 18 months after Luke died, and people are like, no, you must not have loved him. I'm like that. And so I did a lot of videos on like, that is not true. I actually currently love both of them. Like,
well, even having to say anything to them, isn't their place. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, even the fact that you have to say that's actually not true, it's like, who are they to tell you what's exactly for your life? Right. So if anybody is feeling that judgment from somebody, or is somebody trying to put their thoughts on them, did they just lose your husband 18 months ago?
Yeah.
Then they don't have a right to speak to it.
Yeah.
Are they you? And if they're not you, then that advice is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not where you are. I would just honor, whether you date or don't date, marry again, don't, whatever it is, honor yourself and what God is leading you to.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be something that looks like anybody else's journey, because you're a unique person with your own story.
Exactly. Yeah, that's great.
And
advice.
If you can find happiness again, doesn't mean that you love your husband that passed any less. It's just, if God said it's okay to remarry, then guess what? You're fine.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly. Yeah, that's good advice. Well, I would love for people to listen to your podcast, especially, and maybe I'll put a link to this exact episode, the one that you did with Lisa, is that her name?
Yes.
Who's also a widow. I would love for people to listen to that if they want to reach out to you. Can you tell us all the places you can find you? And I will also put these in the description, but I'd love for them to hear where they can find you and reach out to you.
Absolutely. So everything is Mental Health for Christian Women. So if you want to email me, it's Michelle with two L's at mentalhealthforchristianwomen.com. If you want to follow us on Facebook or Instagram, it is at Mental Health for Christian Women. Mental Health for Christian Women. I got that backwards, but you know what I mean. You know which one you throw the at symbol at. If you want to go to the website, it's mentalhealthforchristianwomen.com. So it's like all one big thing
that helps me find you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like everything is the same. And that is such a God thing, because when Adam, the podcaster where you met me, when he said you need to change the name of your podcast so people can find you, he's like, how about Mental Health for Christian Women? And I was like, oh, that's got to be taken. It totally was not taken anywhere. Awesome. It's like God held it just for that time.
That's so great.
So Mental Health for Christian Women. And if you go to the website, mentalhealthforchristianwomen.com, there are some free resources that you can download. And also I send a weekly newsletter too. So
that's awesome. And I saw something about asking you a question.
Yeah. So if anybody has a question that they would like, they can just push a button on the website where it says, you know, ask Michelle, and then I'll answer it on a future podcast.
Oh, that's so awesome. So we'll make sure that we get the links in there, because I want people to hear all these awesome episodes that you have. I've just found them, so I'm excited to start binge listening and hear all the good stuff you have to say, because what you have is a gift and you're sharing it.
Thank
so thank you.
You.
Thank you for doing that. And thank you for being a guest today on this
podcast.
Really appreciate it. I know it's going to touch so many people. You have so much knowledge that I know is going to help so many listeners. Like, we haven't had a podcast like this with a professional teaching us like this. And I'm very, very thankful.
You're welcome. That's what God provided for everybody before time with me. And what you're doing is how God provided for you before time for people who needed you too. And, you know, just to encourage people, be where they are, because that's where you can impact the world from, is right where you are. You know, we need each other. So, thank you. That's very nice of you.
Thank you. And listeners, thank you for being here today. As always, if you liked this podcast, you could give us a little bing, 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you listen. As we shared last time, we are now under the nonprofit Widow Goals, which is really exciting, because Widow Goals not only provides podcasts and social media support, we provide scholarships for Grief Recovery, which is a support group for recovery. And then we also do events. So we'll have a link below. If you've been touched by this ministry and want to give back, you can give back to the nonprofit. So thanks as always. Oh, and if you want to be a guest, you can email us at widowtoosoon@widowgoals.org. And you know how to find us on Facebook, Widow Too Soon, Instagram, all the places. All right. We will talk to you later. Have a great day.